Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy feast day of the great saint and deacon, St. Francis of Assisi. Pray for us. It's feast day today. We're going to talk about him in Fact Check Friday. I will explain. First, though, up on a Friday will be our friend Doug Keck, President and Chief Operating Officer of EWTN. Then we'll wrap up speaking of saints and all the great people that we celebrate in the church this month. Penny Armstrong wrote a fantastic piece of the Register earlier this week. October is a blockbuster month for saints, and she joins us to wrap things up. So that is the rundown. I do want to mention that if you think about St. Francis, most of us who are Catholic recognize, of course, the great gifts he had, the love he had for the church, for the Lord, for Scripture, and, of course, for animals. But unfortunately, and this is why I wanted to talk about this during Fact Check Friday, unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who will do anything to push an agenda. And many people, unfortunately, have used this wonderful saint whose first concern was about evangelizing and making sure people understood who the Lord was and the difference he can make in your life. But they make him out to be an environmentalist, not that caring for the environment is bad, because we're called to do that as Catholic Christians. It's a very Catholic thing, and the church has a lot of teaching on that, important teaching on that. But they just single him out for one or two things, or they make him out to be a social worker, or some even go so far as to claim that he pushed communistic ideas. So there's all kinds of things out there about St. Francis that are not factual. So I thought I would go over a few facts, and I found this great article that was written a few years ago by the head researcher at the wonderful Acton Institute in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And then I'm going to share with you some other facts that you may not know, what I've learned in researching for my new book that comes out through EWTN Publishing in a few months, comes out in January. So excited about it. Italy's Shrines and Wonders. On top of that, living in Italy now half the year in Umbria and seeing the footprint of St. Francis everywhere and well beyond Umbria. Now, we know that he traveled overseas. He traveled to the Mideast. He traveled to the Holy Land. Of course, he went to Rome quite a bit. But he traveled all over Italy, and there's even a St. Francis Way, a journey that you can take, a hike that you can take to stop at the places that were touched by the life of this amazing saint. So I'm going to share a few of those places, and not just in the beautiful medieval town of Assisi, but so many other towns in Umbria, in Lazio, in Tuscany. We will discuss the facts in Fact Check Friday. And then again, as I mentioned, Penny Armstrong joining us to wrap up all about the saints, including St. Francis. Alrighty then, the weather, well, there's some iffy stuff going on in terms of what's happening with the Gulf of Mexico. There are some concerns about another hurricane that could cause some problems. We're keeping a watch on it for you. Otherwise, the National Weather Service is saying record-breaking heat remains across California and the Southwest through this weekend, also building into the central part of the country. That will happen tomorrow. They're also telling us to be on guard for some strong winds and some dangerous fire weather concerns. This is being forecast throughout the northern Great Basin, the northern Rockies, and into the northern central plains. And then locally, heavy rain, and this is where the latest storm comes in, possible across the immediate Gulf Coast as some unsettled weather develops in the Gulf of Mexico. So these are the things to keep in mind weather-wise if you're traveling at all this weekend or if you're in any of those areas affected by the weather. Once again, thanks for tuning in to EWTN and Ave Maria Radio's Catholic Connection. So many great resources on both websites of the networks, EWTN.com and AveMariaRadio.net. Let's check the news, shall we? 4 minutes past the hour on a Friday morning, the feast of St. Francis of Assisi. Pray for us. Hurricane Helene, now the deadliest storm to hit the mainland U.S. since Hurricane Katrina. Officials now say at least 215 people have died due to that storm that slammed the southeast a week ago. More than half of those deaths were in North Carolina, including dozens in Buncombe County alone, where flooding has devastated that area. The death toll, they say, will continue to go up as hundreds of people are still missing. Meanwhile, hundreds of volunteers are working at the Hickory Airport in North Carolina, flying much-needed supplies to the hardest-hit areas of the western part of the state. This volunteer, speaking to the media, Eric Robinson, explaining where the supplies are going.
People tend to go to the fire stations and the churches initially when they don't know where else to go. And so it's great to have resources set there of like, here, man, we have water.
Operation Airdrop and Operation Halo are using more than 50 aircraft to reach people in desperate need of help after Hurricane Helene. They're bringing donated items such as generators, food, water, diapers, and medications to the disaster zones, working with local fire departments and churches to identify areas of need. All goods are donated, and pilots and workers are volunteers. Many have military experience, which helps with the very complicated logistics of what they're actually doing on the ground there. Mark Mayfield explains the devastating floods in North Carolina leading to a new problem.
An entomologist tells NBC News the heavy rain and floodwaters caused by Hurricane Helene likely destroyed the insects' nests underground and in trees. North Carolina health officials say they've brought large amounts of Benadryl and EpiPens to help those who have been stung by swarms of bees or who may be allergic. The medications will be distributed through healthcare providers, hospitals, and emergency services.
In other news this morning, with the Synod in Rome continuing, leaders of the General Assembly holding their first press conference this week. Deborah Lubov with Vatican News says the leaders of the gathering, of course, were busy and spent some time talking about what's been discussed so far.
Held for the first time in the original Holy See press office since undergoing renovations, a press conference shed light on the opening of the second session of the 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod on Synodality. Those speaking at the conference included Special Secretaries of the Assembly, Father Giacomo Costa and Monsignor Riccardo Battocchio, as well as the delegate presidents of the Synod Assembly, Sister Maria de los Dolores Valencia Gomez and American Bishop Daniel Ernest Flores of Brownsville, Texas. Dr. Paolo Ruffini, Prefect of the Dicastery for Communication and Chair of the Commission of the General Assembly, gave opening remarks. The participants reflected on the fruits of these days, noting in particular there has been a good atmosphere in the hall and among the participants. Today, one question inquired about the Holy Father's upcoming visit to pray the rosary at Santa Maria Maggiore ahead of the Day of Prayer and Fasting on the 7th of October. To this, Monsignor Battocchio confirmed that the Holy Father on Sunday will pray in the Marian Basilica at 5 p.m.
And on the first working day of the Synod on Synodality at the Vatican yesterday, or actually on the 2nd of October, Cardinal Victor Manuel Fernandez, prefect of the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, shutting down speculation regarding further theological study into the possibility of women becoming ordained as deacons. The Synod, a multi-year worldwide process of listening, dialogue, and discernment, as Catholic News Agency explains within the Church, commenced its second day yesterday, in which 356 participants convened at the Vatican, again, as you heard in that report from Vatican News, to deep dive into the foundations and proposed mechanisms needed to realize Pope Francis's vision for a more, what he calls, participative Church and a missionary Catholic Church. David Folk Thomas tells us the Archbishop of New York, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, attending a special interfaith Shabbat service tonight in Manhattan commemorating the October 7th tragedies in Israel.
Dolan will join the clergy of Temple Emmanuel on 5th Avenue and East 65th Street for what's being called an interfaith service of solidarity, just days before the one-year anniversary of the terror attack which killed some 1,200 people. Dolan visited Israel back in April and had to take shelter when Iran fired hundreds of missiles into the country.
Chicago officials offering local faith-based leaders disaster preparedness training. The sessions are taking place at various houses of worship through October 10th. The training includes what to do if severe weather comes, how to respond if there is an active shooter, and how to assist someone who is bleeding heavily. The program, created by the city's Office of Emergency Management and Communications, along with the police departments and health departments there as well. Jacqueline Carl tells us a new poll shows nearly 70% of New York City residents think their mayor should step down.
With the mayor facing federal indictment charges, the poll shows Adams' approval rating is down 37% since November of 2023. Nearly two out of three New Yorkers want Governor Hochul to remove Adams from office if he doesn't resign. 81% of New Yorkers don't think Adams should run for re-election in 2025, but 18% think he should.
A Southern California church is adding security cameras and possible guards after being hit by vandals for the fourth time in 2 months. Yellow paint has been splattered on a statue outside of St. Francis de Sales in Sherman Oaks on at least three occasions since August. Last month, someone tried to light fire to the rectory when the priest was asleep inside. The LA police are investigating this as a possible hate crime. A 90-year-old tradition that honors fallen public safety and law enforcement officers is still going strong. The Blue Mass was held yesterday in churches across the country, the service honoring police officers, firefighters, and other first responders who have fallen in the line of duty, and that first Blue Mass took place all the way back in 1934. All three Memphis police officers accused of killing Tyree Nichols have been found guilty on obstruction of justice, but mixed verdicts on the other charges. Nichols' family lawyer, Roma Nucci, spoke outside the courtroom following the verdict yesterday.
The remaining defendants have all been found guilty of one charge or more: obstruction, conspiracy, deprivation of rights, causing bodily injury. This is justice for Tyree.
All three were found not guilty on charges of violating his civil rights. They were also found not guilty on the charges of deliberate indifference to medical needs. One of the police officers, Demetrius Haley, was found guilty on charges of both conspiracy and obstruction of justice. There's a tentative deal reached to end the dock worker strike until January 15th. The International Longshoremen's Association and management groups have reached a tentative deal on wages, and negotiations will continue. One longshoreman explains what's going on now.
We discussed the wages part. In the 3 months, we're going to talk at the table about automation, all the other language that's involved in the contract.
For now, this deal will get supplies back into the stores. The New York governor says that she continues to urge the unions to reach an agreement that respects the rights of workers and ensures a permanent flow of goods. The dock workers' strike only lasted a few days, but it did have a big impact. Former President Trump busy focusing on battleground states such as Michigan with a little over a month to go before Election Day.
33 days from now, we are going to win the state of Michigan. We are going to defeat Lion Kamala Harris, one of the worst candidates ever.
Speaking at a rally Thursday in Saginaw, Michigan, the presidential candidate reminding supporters that mail-in voting has begun in several states, also criticizing the Biden-Harris administration for open borders, claiming immigrants have overrun cities such as Springfield, Ohio, and Aurora, Colorado. New CDC data, as Jana Kodak tells us, shows a record number of kindergartners had vaccine exemptions the last school year.
In the 2023 to 2024 school year, 3.3% of kindergartners were exempt from at least one vaccine, compared to 3% the previous year. Exemptions went up in 40 states and Washington, D.C., and 14 states had exemption rates over 5%. Most states also allow for religious exemptions and a few permit exemptions based on non-religious personal reasons.
Analysts predicting the unemployment rate will hold steady at 4.2% when the September jobs report comes out. Today's numbers are expected to show anywhere from 140 to 150,000 new jobs added. Investors will be looking for signs at the report as to whether the Federal Reserve will be able to continue to lower interest rates in a gradual manner. And Amazon wants to hire a quarter of a million employees for the holiday season. Available positions are full-time, part-time, and seasonal. Pay starts at $18 an hour with benefits such as health care. And finally, in our news segment this morning, on a Friday morning, the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi, October 4th, Texas, as Tammy Trujillo tells us, is suing TikTok over the handling of children's information.
On Thursday, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton filed a lawsuit saying TikTok violated the state's parental consent laws. He claims TikTok failed to comply with Texas SCOPE Act, which requires social media companies to take steps to protect kids online and prohibits them from selling any child's personal data without parental permission. The lawsuit seeks civil penalties of up to $10,000 per violation.
It is a Friday morning, once again, October 4th, the Feast of St. Francis of Assisi. Pray for us. Up next, taking a look at what's on the docket, TV-wise, internet-wise, radio-wise, all good stuff. Doug Heck, our president and chief operating officer of the network, joins us for the Inside Scoop, the inside word of great programming right here on EWTN. Stay tuned.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is brought to you in part by a gift from our day sponsor. Congratulations to St. Catherine of Siena Academy in Wixom on 15 incredible years. At St. Catherine Academy, we know a girl who is challenged is a woman who changes the world. Visit us for our fall open house on Sunday, October 20th from 12 to 2 p.m. Visit stcatherineacademy.org to register. That's S-A-I-N-T, catherineacademy.org.
Mother Teresa said, "The poverty of being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for is the greatest poverty." At St. Joseph's Helpers, their mission is not only to repair homes for those in need, but to repair hearts by providing companionship and peace of mind, especially for the veterans and the elderly. Their dedicated volunteers give their time to help with small household repairs, including minor plumbing and electrical. To request service, volunteer, or donate, Visit St. Joseph's Helpers today at sjhelpers.org. That's sjhelpers.org.
I'm Jack Prisula. Please join us on Tuesday, October 8th, 6:30 p.m. at St. John's Resort in Plymouth for the Rosary, followed by a speech by Father Roy Lee entitled The New Evangelization. Father Lee has a very distinguished pastoral ministry as a lecturer, educator, counselor, retreat master, homilist, and chaplain in the Air Force. No registration is required. For more information, please email jack.crasula, K-R-A-S-U-L-A, at trustinus.com. Thank you and God bless.
This October 8th, our sponsor, Spirit Juice Studios, presents The Full Story of a Hero, narrated by Jonathan Rumi.
Father Flanagan lived his life by a simple principle, that we are all children of God, and it is our responsibility to care for one another.
Heart of a Servant, The Father Flanagan Story, rated PG-13. Tickets and info at fatherflanaganfilm.com. That's fatherflanaganfilm.com. Exclusively in theaters nationwide, October 8th.
Don't touch that dial as you see in Radioland. You're about to hear what's coming up on EWTN with our very own Doug Keck, our President and Chief Operating Officer. I know Patty Armstrong is coming up, Doug, toward the end of the hour, and she did a great piece of the Register all about the saints. This is a month that must keep you guys super busy with all the saints that we have to celebrate, right? Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure. And, of course, as you indicated, St. Francis right at the top. We've got the feast day of St. Francis, and that's today. And we've got St. Francis of Assisi, Sign of Contradiction, airing at 4 p.m. this afternoon. You can check that out, followed by a Eucharistic Journey with St. Francis, the Spirituality of Francis, with an excerpt with Sister Joan Noreen talking about Francis. And then we move on to Saturday, and we got Claire and Francis, and that's our Saturday Night Cinema at 8 p.m. So it's an entire weekend of St. Francis and St. Claire. We also have In the Name of Miracles airing tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the afternoon. Maureen Dingin's miracle story related to St. Maria Faustina. You can check that out. We've also got the Holy Mass at the annual Sea Services Pilgrimage. This is the annual pilgrimage for the Sea Services held at the Seton Shrine in Emmitsburg, Maryland. That's at 7 p.m. That'll be on Sunday. And then we also have a fine program, Bridge of Roses, the story of Our Lady of the Cape. Our good friend Kevin Dunn, who I'm sure you know, from Canada, big, great pro-life warrior, was behind this particular program, and it's airing on the feast day of Our Lady of the Rosary. That's on Monday afternoon at 3:30. And we've also got reminding people of what's going on in the United States, transgender movement, what Catholics really need to know. Running all week long next week at 11:30 p.m. People need to check that out. And if you want to watch it at any time, go to our on-demand platform and find out what's really going on, because there's a lot of things at stake besides the things that people keep talking about in the upcoming election. We've got the Five Priests, a new program having to do with these five wonderful priests who were died while caring for the sick of yellow jack and yellow fever back in 1873 in Shreveport, Louisiana. Very well-made documentary. We've got a three-part mini-series running next week with James McCullough, talking with Father Guy Nichols of the Birmingham Oratory about St. John Henry Newman. Now, his feast day is on the 9th, so you can check that out as well. And we also have a Mass next Wednesday having to do with St. John Henry Newman from Walsingham, our home in the UK. Also, Return to Our Lady of Champion. We've got this premiering, a new program about that particular shrine, which where Bishop Bricken, back in 2010, as you recall, approved the Marian apparition that took place there in Champion, Wisconsin. That will be October 9th at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. And again, check out our on-demand platform, look for our YouTube channel, go to EW10.com, find out all about all these great programs you can watch 24/7, as well as our podcast central for those audio files.
I wanted to ask you more, Doug, information. The movie tomorrow night, it's on both St. Clair and St. Francis, correct?
Correct. Clair and Francis is the name of the program, actually.
Wow.
Yes.
That's you know, and this is so important. I was doing some research. I know that you know that I've got a book coming out with you with EW10. I'm so excited about it, really, coming out in January. But in the research that I did for the book, but also just my own research, spending so much time in Italy and in Umbria, to me, it's amazing what is not told about St. Francis and how the world and many on the left have even hijacked his life to make him out as this person. You know, it drives me crazy.
Absolutely. It's the sister moon, you know, thing, you know. You know, Donovan's music playing in the background in the 1960s. That's kind of how, you know, he was reframed as basically being a vagabond hippie kind of guy of the 60s wandering around Italy. You know, kind of that reflective, you know, non-judgmental, I love the plants and I'm an environmentalist and all of these things like that. Which, these things were all true, but they were only a small part of what drove Francis. What drove Francis was his love of Jesus and his love of the Eucharist and his attempt to rebuild the church, which is really what the call was to him from the St. Damiano cross when he had that situation happen where he was guided in that direction. And, you know, all of us need to rebuild the church, but, you know, it all begins at the foundation, and the foundation is Jesus Christ.
No, it's so important to provide these types of films, because I know the vetting process that you go through. And sometimes, I mean, people are busy and maybe they don't understand what goes into deciding what is going to be aired on the network, both radio and TV. This is why it's so important, and I'm dedicating my Fact Check Friday after we're done, you and I, this morning, about going through some of the things that the world wants us to believe about St. Francis that simply aren't true. There is a process that's super important, a vetting process. Everything that goes on this network is vetted properly and carefully. And I want people to remember that, especially when you're looking at the lives of a saint like St. Francis, who, again, in many ways has been hijacked by the world.
Right, absolutely. And obviously we do the best we can. And at times you'll mention things and they can be contextualized as being, you know, whether this was something that was greatly held by the people at the time or... you know, could be even described at this time as a pious legend because there's no proof exactly that this occurred. But if you let people understand that, but you don't take everything away and make everything into a litmus test of, well, if I wasn't there and I didn't see it, then it couldn't happen. Or the other side, which is if it's something to do with miracles or it's miraculous, well, then that obviously didn't happen. And the reality is what people are searching for today is that connection, that miraculous. They're looking for that eternal. They see that the materialistic world is not satiating them. It doesn't, regardless of what TikTok tells them or Instagram tells them. In fact, those things make people more depressed and upset and anxious than they've ever been in this world. And it's really when you turn to your faith and you go to the quiet of a chapel or Eucharistic adoration or spending some time shutting off all of the technology and just praying and listening to what God is talking to you about. It's not even just, as you know better than I, what you're talking to God about. It's really for your chance to listen to what He has to say. He already knows what's in your heart. He already knows what you need. You're the one who's not listening.
Yeah, exactly. So tomorrow night, St. Clair and St. Francis, that's awesome. And then also I'm excited because I know the Register is doing a big piece on the Rosary coming up on Monday, which is cool because you mentioned you're going to have the show on the Rosary as well. So what I always like to stress to people is that there's a consistent theme. When you have a particular event going on, you can get it not only in the movies or in the programming on radio or in the movies that you air on TV, but then you follow it up with on our other outlets. And so it's very, I think, all comes together. So you're constantly getting fed great information about the Catholic faith, about a particular feast day, a particular saint, right?
Absolutely. And in different ways and in different formats and focusing on slightly different things. So anybody can find something, you know, that will appeal to them and their interest level on our on-demand platform, our YouTube channel, on the network at any time, on radio at any time. And it all fits together. And that's always our great challenge. As Catholics, everything we do has to fit together. We can't have one show saying one thing and another saying another, like it happens sometimes in other religious media where there's not that same connection. Everything for us flows together. It all fits together. And that's why when people hear that discordant sound, they recognize it. And that's why, you know, we respond to those things. And that's why we try to focus, as we do all the time, on bringing people the truth, because the truth attracts, and people can hear it when they hear it. It resounds. That's why Mother Angelica still resounds today. Bishop Sheen does, because when they speak, it speaks to your heart, because you recognize the truth when you hear it.
I remember when I worked at the, before I came over to Catholic Radio, I worked at the same station where Al Cresta worked, may he rest in peace, at Evangelical Station. And one of the things that affirmed me, I never left the faith and I had just come back, even when I was working at this Protestant station. Wonderful people, but depending on what time of the day you listened,
right,
one person was preaching one thing, another person was teaching something entirely differently. And it's like, we've got to agree on something here.
Right.
And so to me, it was an affirmation of the consistency of the faith.
Absolutely, and that's what Marcus Gordai always said about, authority. Where is the authority? Who's deciding what it actually means? And that's what people look for the church, which is why sometimes in our present state, where some of the understanding some of the statements that are made can be a little confusing, especially for the average person, it's important to check into EWTN News, our coverage of the Synod through our news department, and upcoming, we'll do other events as they become available. So look forward to that.
Good stuff. As always, have a great weekend. We'll be right back. So glad you're listening to EWTN. As Doug Keck so eloquently explained, we take our role in terms of informing folks about the faith extremely seriously, and that's why I thought it would be neat to talk a little bit more. As Doug mentioned, of course, lots of great programming coming up this weekend on St. Francis and St. Clair. And then my friend Patty Armstrong will be up in just a few minutes to talk about this powerhouse month of the saints in October, right? So many great ones. So St. Francis, just an amazing saint. And I don't know how many people realize, but he was not a priest. He was a deacon. And he did not want to be a priest because he thought he was unworthy. He thought that this was a better place for him to serve as a deacon. There's so much to say about him, but first I just wanted to share with you this neat article that I found on a very reliable source, and this is our friends at the Acton Institute. They're based in western Michigan in the town of Grand Rapids. And this was posted several years ago during the month of October on one of the, of course, so not exactly on the feast day of St. Francis, but in discussion of St. Francis. And it was written by the head of research, Dr. Samuel Gregg, a Ph.D., he's the director of research at the Acton Institute, so I want to give full attribution. And he gleaned these facts from several different very solid resources, including Francis of Assisi, A New Biography, and some other sources as well. So it's very well researched and documented. And now being in Umbria, spending so much time in Umbria, and visiting so many of the towns associated with St. Francis, I can attest that what he is saying in this article, from what I've heard from different guides, Orthodox Catholic guides in Assisi and other towns, that this is absolutely true, and that the world, in many ways, as we discussed with Doug, has simply hijacked St. Francis to make them their figure and to push particular leftist agendas. So I just wanted to use this segment of Fact Check Friday because we need to check the facts on St. Francis and make sure we know of whom we're speaking, and especially if we're asking for his intercession. So St. Francis articulated, there are just several points that he makes. I'm going to talk about some of the other towns associated with St. Francis in Italy and beyond. St. Francis articulated no legal or social reform program whatsoever. Such projects were alien to him. Francis believed that its followers should engage in manual labor to procure necessities. Begging was seen as a secondary alternative. St. Francis believed, and Doug Keck alluded to this, one's most direct contact with God was in the Mass, not in serving the poor or in the natural world. And here's something super important. The more you read about him and the more you visit the places and you go to some of these sanctuaries such as Laverna or Greccio or many others, you see just how true this is. He was fiercely Orthodox, St. Francis, when it comes to faith and morals. He thought that friars guilty of liturgical abuses or heresy should be remanded to higher church authorities. St. Francis told the Muslim Sultan he was there to talk about the Christian faith and to save the man's soul. Now, there is a lot about St. Francis saying he was all about interfaith dialogue and, you know, modern interfaith dialoguer. He's a great example for us, and we have to be like St. Francis and be open and say that all religions are fine and blah, blah, blah. Look, we pray for all people of faith, right? But we believe that the Catholic Church has the fullness of truth, the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith. And St. Francis did as well, and he preached it. And this article from the Acton Institute says, St. Francis was about as far removed from a modern interfaith dialoguer as you can get. Another really, really important point. St. Francis rejected abstinence from meat and was not a vegetarian. He loved animals, but regarded vermin and mice as the devil's agents. He also believed that the Mass required careful preparation, use of the finest sacred vessels, and proper vestments. And here's one, and this is what Doug mentioned as well in terms of the saint's dedication to the Eucharist. St. Francis' final words to his followers were concerned with proper reverence for the Eucharist, not poverty. Francis was a 13th century Orthodox Catholic, not a modern spiritual individualist. Francis' references and allusions to nature in his writings, preaching, and instruction were overwhelmingly drawn from the scriptures rather than the environment itself. In other words, he saw God in everything. Francis regarded the beauty in nature and the animal world as something that should lead to worship and praise of God, but not things to be invested with God-like qualities. You can also get a lot about the life of St. Francis from his biographer, St. Bonaventura, who was born in the beautiful, beautiful border town of Civita, Bagno Reggio. We just took friends there over the weekend. It's an incredible place. And the remaining relics of St. Bonaventura are actually in a church across the bridge in Bagno Reggio. There's a Civita, and then there's Bagno Reggio. But I'll tell you, there's some great resources out there, and it's important for us to make sure we know of whom we're speaking and where are we getting the information on these saints. Now, oftentimes, and this is something I'm passionate about, exposing people to different places. Not saying don't go to Assisi. I would absolutely encourage you, if you ever have the opportunity to come to Italy, definitely Assisi has to be on that bucket list. Not only is it beautiful and very well maintained, but the Basilica of St. Francis is off the charts. And then, of course, you have the San Damiano Cross, which is now housed in the Basilica of Santa Chiara, which is just beautiful. The cross that spoke to Francis and said, and he heard Jesus say, "Build my church, rebuild my church." Assisi is gorgeous, very important to the Catholic faith. But this amazing saint traveled far and wide. He went all the way down to Rome, of course. We know he was in Rome many times. We also know that he was in northern Lazio, which is the region of Rome. He was in Greccio, where he established a beautiful, beautiful shrine dedicated to the Nativity. He came back from the Holy Land and wanted his people and his brothers to experience what he experienced. And so he got the townspeople together. There was a mass. Obviously, he didn't say the mass, but he did read the gospel. And you can go, and many popes have been there. There's pictures of Pope Francis and also, I believe, Pope Benedict. Just remember, we were there a couple of months ago. But it is a beautiful shrine where this first nativity took place. And you can go through the hermitage of St. Francis and his brothers. You come out, there's a beautiful Catholic church. It's just gorgeous. And then there's also in Tuscany, so you've got Lazio to the south of Umbria, then you've got Tuscany to the northwest in terms of the site of Laverno. In Laverno, there's a beautiful shrine, sanctuary there, and the spot where St. Francis received the wounds of Christ, the stigmata. And then if you're interested more in St. Francis, you can go to Gubbio, the gorgeous town of Gubbio, my favorite, or you can go east to Spoleto, amazing city of Spoleto. In the cathedral there are letters to one of Francis's brothers that he signed, and they're in a reliquary, and they're there, and you can actually see them there. And then he also spent time going through the beautiful eastern Umbrian town of Bavagna, where there's a story about how Francis stopped and spoke to the birds. So St. Francis is much bigger in terms of his evangelization approach and what he believed than some in the world would want us to think. So it's really important on this, the feast of this great saint, St. Francis of Assisi, to really understand what he was about. Take some time, ask for his intercession, and to show you what was important to him, because what was important to him should be important to us as well. St. Francis of Assisi, pray for us. We'll be right back. More on the saints with my friend Patty Armstrong coming up. continuing our discussion on the Saints with my dear friend and fellow journalist and talk show host and author, Patty McGuire Armstrong. You can find her great work in a number of places, including the National Catholic Register. Boy, Patty, the headline and, you know, and the title of the article just hits the nail right on the head, because, my goodness, October is indeed a blockbuster month for the Saints. And Patty's article in the Register was just posted on October 1st. My goodness, there's so many amazing Saints in October. Good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me, Teresa. Yeah, October, you know, this article has been years in the making, because every October I think, wow, this Saint, and now this one, and like, what a month. And I thought, this year, I'm going to put it all down so we can have it in front of us with just a real brief summary. And it was hard, because there's so many of them, and the article was so long, even with very brief summaries, because what a power-packed month October is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to go, I'll go through the list quickly, but then we can talk a little bit more about, you know, we were discussing this during the break about the importance of having a relationship with the Saints. Of course, St. Therese on the 1st, the Guardian Angels on the 2nd, St. Theodore on the 3rd. Let's say we go down, we see, of course, St. Francis today. Tomorrow we have St. Faustina, Our Lady of the Rosary on Monday, and then Blessed Carlo Acutis, another one of my faves. And then my absolute favorite, as you know, we've talked about this, St. Teresa of Avila on the 15th, St. Ignatius of Antioch, oh my goodness, it's just St. Luke, St. Isaac Joseph, it goes on and on, Pope St. John the 23rd, you've got John Paul II. This is a crazy, wonderful month, right?
It is, and you know, three of my children are named from three of these saints, three of the 10. So it really is. I thought, I got to do something about this. October is so amazing. I want to just really celebrate it.
Why do you think, and I know this, I have changed my attitude totally since coming back to the church. I always knew about the saints growing up in the faith, and the images were very popular, especially in Italian-American households. But I really didn't have a relationship with them until I started studying their lives and I came back to the church. And we're missing so much when we don't call on the saints.
We really do, and I don't know what it is. I think as little kids, I fell in love with St. Therese of Lisieux, and so she's my confirmation saint. So we both have St. Therese and St. Teresa that are special to us. But I don't know, you just, if you fall away from the church and you get into the world, the saints don't seem relevant. And sometimes when you come back to the church, you don't stop and think, hey, we have our brothers and sisters in heaven. We can be in a relationship with them. They can help us get to heaven, and they were ordinary people here on earth. And then you add to that the fact that other religions don't really pay attention to the saints, even say, hey, you shouldn't even be talking to them. What are you doing? And so we kind of put them by the wayside and not realize that this is such a fullness of our faith, that we're a whole family, and that they can actually help us get to heaven and inspire us. You cannot read a life of the saints. Pick anyone. You cannot read their life and not be changed and uplifted by their their lives.
Right. I think for me, what encourages me the most is, we talk about this because you and I are on an email chain and we chat back and forth about the culture a lot, and we have a great interest in what happens in the culture. But if you look at the lives of the saints, much of what we're dealing with now, only though it manifests itself differently, but it's, as it says in Ecclesiastes, there's really nothing new under the sun. We can look at their lives and see, wow, they dealt with this. They dealt with politics. They dealt with persecution. They dealt with problems in the family. They're all relatable if we take the time to get to know them.
They really are, and I think that's another reason why we can disregard them, is, oh, that was a different time. But if anything, it was a harder time. We want inspiration. And then I love that we have the more modern saints, like you mentioned, Blessed Carlos Acutis, who died at 15 years of age. And I love the photos of him. He's just kind of his hair is a little tousled. He's got blue jeans on. He's just a kid. And yet he was a saint because he loved the church and he offered up all his suffering for the Lord, the Pope, and the church. And that's us. He lived and suffered for us.
How did you decide what to include in the short summaries? Because each one you could do, I don't know, 20 articles and still not exhaust all the information on them.
I wanted to put down the most powerful reasons that we look to them. For instance, okay, St. Ignatius of Antioch. Well, what does he have to teach us? He lived, they think he's born in around the year 50. And he was martyred. It used to be the saints were the ones that were martyred, and then it was the church developed developed a process later on for determining the different levels of, you know, beatification, Sermon of God, beatification, and canonization. So what does somebody who was born in the year 50 and was martyred in Rome around the year 108? Well, he was a disciple of St. John the Evangelist. He became a bishop, and he wrote 7 letters defending the church against heresies that are still relevant today. He's the one who first used the term Catholic to mean universal. If that's not as relevant today as it was back then, as a matter of fact, it's even more relevant because in the year 2024, where people have all these different versions of Christianity, not that they don't have some of the truth and they, you know, can be an inspiration to us in other ways when they love Jesus, but we have the fullness and we can look back to St. Ignatius of Antioch and say, see, the church we are, the church that we look to, that we belong to, has all those elements back in the very beginning.
And then St. Luke on the 18th, of course, the author of the Gospel of Luke, as well as Acts and Acts of the Apostles. We think he was a doctor. We know he was a disciple of St. Paul and a martyr. But again, St. Luke, who gave us so much in terms of understanding the physical life of Jesus.
And gave us so much of the New Testament. You know, the Gospel of Luke is believed to be written by him and the Acts of the Apostles. And then the very next day, I have an Isaac in seminary right now, my youngest son. He's in the seminary, and I fell in love with St. Isaac Jogues because I would read the lives of the saints to the kids. So if you have children, whether they're going to become your heroes or you have children and you want to read the lives of the saints, I became mesmerized by his story. And this is how I learned a lot of new saints this way, is he was born in France. He became a Jesuit missionary in Canada, and his first 6 years were spent with the Huron Native Americans, and a lot of them became converted and became Catholic. And then he was expanding, and the warring Iroquois captured him and his companions, Rene Goupil, I'm probably not pronouncing his name correctly, and a group of Huron converts, and they were, when you read about how they were tortured, and I read this in the children's book, and my kids, especially the boys, were mesmerized. You know, I won't get graphic about it, but the book kind of did a little bit. And we were mesmerized by the tortures. Now, that's bad enough, but he became a slave, and he escaped. So if I escaped from that, I don't think I would turn, or I wouldn't look back. But he got back to France, and his hands were mutilated, so he lost some of his fingers. And he asked for permission to go back.
Go back.
So
I
he
know.
Went.
Yeah.
He went back. That's why he's such a big hero of mine, just like St. Patrick, who I'm named for. So St. Patrick and St. Isaac Jogues, to return to where you were held slave and captive and tortured and become a missionary to them. And so many of the Mohawks, they were converted. Now he ended up, because sickness broke out, some of the Mohawks accused him of practicing witchcraft. And somebody, he was killed by a tomahawk to the head. But the very person who killed him became converted. And so you know the blood of the martyrs are the seeds
of the
new
church.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I named our son Isaac after him. And he's in the seminary now at the Kenrick Glennon Seminary in St. Louis.
Wow. We're talking with author, speaker, writer, talk show host Patty Armstrong about her latest beautiful article in National Catholic Register all about the Saints of October. It's a blockbuster month. Okay, let's talk about Miguel. You know how much I love St. Teresa of Avila. I mean, I really have to give you a lot of credit for being able to summarize her up in like 4 sentences in this article.
Well, one of the things I want to say about saints like St. Teresa of Avila, her writings are still in print today. Now, this is a woman who lived from 1515 to 1582. So, you know, Teresa, you and I are authors. If our books are still in print, you know, a decade later, we're pretty happy about that.
Yeah, really.
So, The Way of Perfection, The Interior Castle, is still in print. You can go to bookstores. You can go order them online. So this is what is so amazing about the saints and why we should develop relationships with them, is that she has impacted untold numbers to deeper spirituality. You know, I don't know, millions and millions, a billion. How many people has her life impacted, even though she lived in the 1500s? So she is like so. I think that's part of the supernatural amazingness of the saint, is not only did they impact the world in which they lived, the time in which they lived, but they are still creating the ripple effect of their lives of holiness are still spreading today.
Yeah. She founded 16, as you say, 16 monasteries of women. And I love the fact you talked briefly about the long journeys by donkey. If you go to Avila, I've been to Avila, and you can go and you can see some of the, I don't know how to call it, the equipment that she had with her. And you look at it and you say, how did you even go a mile, you know, riding on a donkey, which I've done before, which is extremely uncomfortable. Camel's worse, but donkey's not much better, let me tell you. And just the conditions and, you know, what she put up with, and then all the persecution, and oh my goodness, it's amazing to look at these people's lives.
And she had frequent illness. Yeah, when you think about the conditions, and we often forget that. So if you're going to look back in time and look at some of the saints, realize, I mean, now on one hand, we can be like, well, I'm not that strong. Well, yeah, we don't know how strong we are until we align ourselves with God. Because these are people who, and she was a woman during that time, traveling on a donkey with not the greatest health. And what she was able to accomplish wasn't because of her. It wasn't a reflection on her. It was a reflection of her trusting in God and going where he led.
Yep. Patty, this is great, but I want to give you time because I know you have a retreat you're doing on the saints. And we will put a link to this beautiful article on the National Catholic Register that Patty just recently wrote. Should still be up there, by the way. But just in case, the headline is, October is a blockbuster month for the saints. Blessed be God and his angels and saints. You'll find this on the Register, but we will put a link to it on our archives at Catholic Connection on AveMariaRadio.net. So you're giving a retreat, and you're going to be talking about the saints, correct?
Yeah, saints as in terms of spiritual warfare. Like, we don't have to fight this alone. They've already fought the battle. And it's going to be at Maryvale. If you go to MaryvaleND.org, it's in beautiful Valley City right outside of Fargo. And I'm going to be leading it with Roxanne Solonen, who's a co-author of mine. Aww. Also a radio host for Real Presence Radio.
I love her. Tell her I said hi. I haven't talked to her in a while. She's great.
She was so excited to meet you just recently, like a year or so ago. At one of the wine retreats. So
yeah, we were at the wine retreat. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, she's a huge fan of yours. And so we were inspired to journey with the saints, and we're going to be introducing a lot of them, and some that did spiritual warfare head to head and were courageous, but to realize the saints have already won the battle.
Yeah.
They're already in heaven, and they did the battle, and we do battle every day. So I've done a couple other articles with, I interviewed two of the bishops, our two bishops in North Dakota, who talked about that it's no exaggeration to say that we can tap into the saints to do spiritual battle, not just their example, but by their prayers, that they love to pray for us, that they already are in heaven with God, and they would love to help us get to heaven with them. And the spiritual battle that we do is every day. It's temptation. It's some of us feel like maybe it's a little harder. You know, Teresa, you and I, once we turned over our lives, you know, I was writing for the secular world, and I didn't think it would be very interesting to write in Catholic religious stuff. I bet you thought the same thing, like, oh, that sounds kind of boring. But then now we are just the opposite, like, wow, there could be nothing more exciting. And to call in the troops, we are a veritable spiritual army, an army of Catholics. Yeah, and that we don't have to go it alone. We have a whole army of angels and saints and the Blessed Mother that are doing battle with us. We don't have to do it alone.
Onward, Christian soldiers, and there's over 10,000 Catholic saints, believe it or not. Quite the army for us, amazing men and women. Patty, all the best for your retreat. Thank you for all the great work you do for the Register. And again, I want to remind folks, Patty's article was recently posted, her recent article. Of course, this crazy, amazing month of October. And the headline is, October is a blockbuster month for saints. Blessed be God and his angels and his saints. And she did a great job of summarizing the life of these amazing saints during the month of October, including, of course, St. Teresa of Lisieux, a doctor of the church, the guardian angels, St. Teresa of Avila, another doctor of the church, St. Francis of Assisi, whose feast day we celebrate today. I mean, it's great because you can go through this article and look at all these saints, and then maybe look up something, as I mentioned earlier, about St. Francis to find more about their lives. We'll be right back. Let you know it's coming up on a Monday. Stay tuned.
Tickets are on sale now for the Michigan Catholic Women's Conference Saturday, October 12th at the Lansing Center in Michigan. Each year, over 1,000 women from all over the state of Michigan gather together for a day filled with inspiring talks by great speakers, praise, and Mass with Bishop Earl Boyer. Gather your friends and family for a special day filled with faith and fellowship in Christ. For more information, go to MichiganCWC.org. That's MichiganCWC.org.
What sins should Catholics mention in confession? According to the Catechism, we are obliged to confess serious sin at least once a year. A mortal sin must be confessed and sacramental absolution received before taking communion, unless there is a very grave reason for receiving communion and there is no possibility of going to confession. Confessing all the sins a penitent can remember undoubtedly places him or her before the divine mercy for pardon. If, however, a penitent knowingly withholds sins, he places nothing before the divine goodness for remission through the priest. Confessing venial sins is not strictly necessary, but is strongly urged by the Church in order to fight evil tendencies, to strengthen our conscience, and let ourselves be healed by Christ. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism. Thank you for listening.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Thanks for tuning in to Catholic Connection. Of course, it's a co-production of Ave Maria Radio out of Ann Arbor, Michigan, and EWTN out of Irondale, Alabama. Find us both online, AveMariaRadio.net and EWTN.com. Great to be with you on a Friday in this beautiful feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. And check out Patty's great article, because it gives you an outline of all the different saints that we're celebrating this month and on whom we can call for their intercession. Have a great weekend. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening, and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.